Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for home theater geeks is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, episode 107, recorded April 16th, 2012. NAB. Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code NAB4. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker who needs stock video clips, photos, illustrations, music tracks, or sound effects, check out Pond5 for instant downloads at the best prices anywhere. And for 50 files absolutely free through May 31st, visit www.pond5.com/twit. Here we are once again at the National Association of Broadcasters Show 2012, and it's time for Home Theater Geeks.
Hey!
With our Home Theater Geek, Scott Wilkinson, editor, online editor for Home Theater Magazine.
Hey, Leo, welcome back to the show. It only seems like yesterday we were here.
Well, it was only a couple of months ago. It was January, CES.
CES.
We're going to kind of do the same thing, which is go to the big four booths for home theater. We'll go to JVC, Panasonic, Sony, and we're going to start with Canon in just a little bit.
That's right. And I'm mostly interested in finding out what these companies are doing in the pro world, which is what NAB is about, to enhance and improve the consumer experience once you get the content home to the TV or into the movie theaters. And we're going to see a lot of 4K, that is quadruple the resolution of HD. We're undoubtedly going to see some 3D along the way. And streaming, I hope we find some stuff about streaming too, which is becoming more important as we go. And here at this show, of course, it's all the back-end stuff. It's all the professional stuff that allows that to happen, that allows the creative people to tell stories.
Yeah. Well, you know, I talked to the NAB people earlier today, and he told me a surprising thing. Only 25% of the people who come to NAB are broadcasters.
Really?
And I said, you really should name yourself the National Association of Content Creators, because really, this is the content creator show.
That's
movie
correct.
People come here.
Correct.
People like us, IPTV people
yep.
come here, streaming
yep.
people, podcasters. This is a place where you look at high-end gear for the most part for streaming. Although, you go over to the Blackmagic booth, you'll see things that let you stream for $1,000. We'll see cameras here that are $1,000. So
GoPro right behind us is
even less. A couple of $100
yeah.
for high def. You put it on your helmet or, you know, as you
right.
scuba dive.
That's right.
So it is absolutely the case. This is for people who create content of all
that's
kinds.
That's right. And we're seeing democratization of that.
Absolutely.
As you said. Yeah, it's very exciting.
Now, I don't know if you can afford a $15,000 camera. I don't know if I can, but
yeah.
I sure as heck want one.
I know.
3 days ago, Canon announced their new 4K Canons. The 1D, which is their top-of-the-line still camera, now has a new C version designed for the cinematographer.
Yep.
There's a C300, a C500. We're going to get to see it right now. Are you
it's
ready?
It's really cool. Let's go.
I'm so excited. This is the camera. It's interesting because Canon held off on this announcement until NAB. They didn't save this for CES. They didn't save it for one of the camera shows,
no.
PMA. It's at NAB.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's
this isn't
right.
a camera probably broadcasters would use because, frankly, the quality is too high. It's 4K. You're not going to put 4K TV on the air.
No, that's true. I went to a demo of some content that was shot on both of these cameras, the C500 and the 1DC. And one of the comments made during the presentation was, you know, it makes makeup and everything even harder.
I actually made a note after the show today. I'm going to the MAC store to get some cosmetics. And by the way, if you ask Siri for the Mac store, it shows you an Apple store. You have to say Mac Cosmetics. Just a little tip
okay.
for Siri. Chuck Westfall from Canon is here. Chuck, we've got to fight people off. They're so excited about seeing these new cameras.
Absolutely. It's the hottest thing at the show.
So let's start with the 1D. Now, that's the top of the line DSLR from Canon.
Right.
Are you going to discontinue the 1DX? What happens?
Oh, not at all. The 1DX camera is really going to be our top of the line for still shooters primarily. And it has the video function capability to a limited extent, but it's really more of a still shooter's camera, where the 1DC is definitely a video camera with a still capability.
Do you have all the capabilities of the 1DX in the 1DC?
Absolutely everything except one tiny thing, which is that you can't hook a studio strobe into it anymore. But for video, that doesn't make any difference.
Right. You don't use a strobe. So you're showing it. Where can we see it? I'd like to see it. We're going to fight off the people?
Yeah. We were going to try to get you in here. What I wanted to show you first was actually the
C500. So, yeah, you made three. You have three announcements, the C300, the C500, and the 1DX. These are all video cameras now.
Yeah, correct. And the C300 is actually a camera that's been out on the market now since January. It's our full HD solution.
It's a 1080p or is it 4K?
It's 1080p. Okay. And it's getting a very, very good response already for a lot of television and movie production. Now that here at the show, we're going to be able to demonstrate the C500, which brings it to the 4K, and then also the 1DC.
I'm really excited.
The amazing thing to me is that you only introduced the C300, which is a 1080p. You first introduced it, I believe, only last November.
Right.
Yeah. And now 5 months later, you have 4K.
Yeah, and the thing of it is that you can see by looking at the C500 that it's based on the same form factor and shares a lot of the components. So I think you can kind of tell that we really had 4K in mind right from the get-go. We wanted to start off with the C300 and then follow it up with this camera right away just to make sure that we had a chance to show both.
Are you using the same Canon mounts that you use on your other DSLRs, or are there special lenses?
Well, we have the same Canon mount, but we also do have special lenses.
So. You have more lenses.
Yeah.
I think you're introducing two new lenses here at the show, right?
Correct. We have two new compact, lightweight cinema zooms that are good for like handheld or Steadicam type use, as opposed to the real big guns that we have for studio operation.
So. And both of these are full-frame sensors. They're 35-millimeter sensors.
Well, the ones on the C300 and C500 are identical in size. They're Super 35.
So whereas, Super 35.
Yeah, so they're roughly 24.6 by 13.8 in the actual imaging format, which is perfect for all the Super 35 in terms of like PL mount or ours. That we also have on the 1DC, it's a larger sensor. It's a full 24 by 36, and what we're doing is we're cropping the center cut out of that to get the 4K.
You're not doing any scaling. You're rather just using whatever pixels you need for that particular image.
Yeah, and that was really actually a key strategy because since we don't have to downsample it, it actually makes a much cleaner image.
It also picks up a lot of light. I mean, you can work in really low light in this.
Yeah. We're able to shoot all the way up to ISO 204,000.
It might be a little grain at that level.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Well, but I saw the screening last night of the two short films that were made, one on the 1DC and one on the C500.
Right.
And the low light capabilities, I mean, there were some shots in those of very low light, and I was amazed at the amount of shadow detail that was being drawn out of there with just available light in the shot.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the things we've been working on so hard, especially with the C300 as a starting point, because we were able to develop not only the sensor technology in terms of size, but also the way we're pulling the color data out is very unique. We're not debayering it like a lot of companies do. We're actually taking 8.3 megapixels worth of information and getting it down to a full HD.
So I hope we can sort of wiggle our way
into.
It's
so popular, we're never going to get in
here,
Chuck.
I know, I know.
People love this camera.
Let's see if we can do.
All right, we've got Chuck on the job. You know, one thing that changes when you start shooting 4K is your whole production workflow. But Canon's got companies here like Photochem that show 4K workflow solutions.
Exactly.
That you can work with 4K raw video, which
that's,
is a
that's
huge
what they output.
File
yeah,
size.
It's huge.
So you need like heavy-duty technologies here.
Yes.
Let's follow Chuck.
I think he's bulldozing away.
We're going to get in here. So. What they typically do at these trade shows is they give you something to watch. In this case, it's a furniture maker. I love that. She's making a chair.
It's very good. Very colorful background.
And not a particularly brightly lit background. This is one reason I think that they do that is so you can show off the amazing color and low light and the depth of field you get on these cameras. It's just remarkable.
I'm showing on the LCD of the camera that I can actually cut in at 5x or 10x magnification to check focus and then go back to my full frame view. Now this camera is amazing in the respect that it can do the 4K directly to a compact flash card. You don't have to go to an external recorder on this
one. Wow.
So it's,
But you can only probably do 10 minutes on a 16-gig card. I mean, you'd have to have pretty big cards in here.
Yeah, you want to have big cards for this,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But, this is the 1DX we're looking at.
Actually, this is a 1DC, I believe.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
1DC.
And so what we're able to do here is record our 4K 24p directly into the CF card. We also have the option of going full HD, and if you do that, full HD will now on this camera go up to 60 frames a second.
Wow.
And there's a couple of other nice things. If you take your HDMI out, you can record directly uncompressed to an external recorder, 8-bit 422. So you have ability to record either to the CF card or from an external recorder through the HDMI. So there's that, and there's also the ability to continue using the LCD monitor while you're using the HDMI, which we didn't do before. And there's a headphone jack on here with real-time monitoring. So definitely a full range of features that we listened to the market, and they told us what they needed in terms of video capability, and now we put it into an EO-sized body.
And you've got this new cinematographer's lens on here. Tell us about the lens.
Right. What we're talking about here, I'm going to pull it around a little bit so you can see it. This is one of our Cinema Prime lenses. We have actually three Cinema Primes at 24mm, 50mm, and 85mm. T-stops of like T1.5 here. We have a T1.350 and a T1.385. So what we've done is we've put in, you know, the professional in terms of the focusing ring having a 300-degree turn, much easier for focus pulling.
So that responds to the issue that our camera guy, Brent Bai, was saying. It's so hard to focus these Super 35 cameras because they're letting in so much light. The depth of field is so shallow. So this will help a lot because it's geared so that you just larger movements to make smaller adjustments.
Yeah, very, very much so.
Yeah.
And you'll notice with these gears on here, too, that it's industry standard gearing, and what that'll do for you is when you get into a rig and you've got a focus puller, you've got a nice little wheel that you can mark up so that when you're going from point A to point B, you can easily swing from one to the next.
In a standard way. You're using the Zagudo stuff as accessorized here, and then, of course, it has a wheel and it has a lot of nice features. When you say T, you don't say F, you say T in cinematography. What is the difference? Is it the same idea?
Well, T stands for transmission. And so when you're talking about a zoom lens, a zoom lens may have upwards of 25 pieces of glass inside.
Wow.
And so the story at that point becomes not just the
the aperture
of the lens opening, but actually how much light got through all that glass.
How much is transmitted. So it isn't an F-stop anymore, it's a T-stop, but are they roughly comparable?
Yeah, they are. I mean, for example, this 24mm we have available as a standard SLR lens, and we call it an EF2414.
Well, okay.
But in the cinema world, it's a T1.5.
Okay. Slightly lower because the transmission, because all that glass
and
takes a little bit of...
And we're being very precise, too.
Right, right, which, of course, pros want. Right. What a nice camera. Now, this isn't going to be inexpensive.
No, we're looking at a roughly $15,000 price point for this camera body.
For the body.
When you're talking about 4K, that's definitely on the low end.
Yeah.
And
seriously.
Especially for to having the SLR form factor, which is so desirable for shooting in a confined space.
How much are the Cinematography Prime lenses, roughly?
The Primes are going for about $6,800. And the zooms, we have the bigger zooms go for roughly in the mid-40s, and then the compact zooms are going to be about 25.
In this short, one of the shorts I saw that was filmed with this camera, one of the cool things about it was they did a little behind-the-scenes thing, and the cinematographer, the director of photography, shot part of the shot as a couple was running downstairs and literally handed it off to his assistant, and they continued the shot.
Who needs a dolly?
Unbroken.
Who needs a crane?
Yeah, I mean, that's old school. They used to be able to do that in film, but now they can do it in digital.
You know, when the 5D Mark II came out, so many people from house and movies used it, even though it really wasn't intended to be a cinematographer's camera. Canon must have seen, well, there's some demand for a product like this. Of course, you're looking at RED doing 4K cameras. This is your response, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely, because when the 5D Mark II came out in 2008, that was our first indication. You know, we brought that camera out with nary a thought of cinema in mind. It was really primarily aimed at the photojournalism market.
The video was just kind of an afterthought.
In a way, yeah. And, you know...
We all loved it.
A gentleman that you may know...
I ran into Vince LaFleurie outside just a moment ago, and I said, Vince, are you dying to get a C300? He said, I cannot wait. A 1DX, you cannot wait. When will the 1DX be available?
Definitely within this year. We don't have an exact date on it yet, but we're looking at it. I would say... we hope it'll be out in early fourth quarter.
And the C500?
Also within this year, but we don't have anything exact yet.
Let's go take a look, though.
It's right next door here.
Yeah, I really want to see that. This looks even more like a movie camera, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Let me move around the other side. Let me get over there with you. Okay, so here with the C500, what we've got going is basically our top-of-the-line cinema camera. And where this differs from, say, for example, the 1DC, is that the 1DC was doing a compressed, like a motion JPEG to the CF card, and it had a fixed frame rate of 24 frames a second. Here, we've got raw 4K video coming out of two 3G SDI ports that we can shoot anywhere from one frame a second up to 60 frames a second.
So you could, these could be used as studio cameras. They could be used live as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we're anticipating that they will be used for both the high-end movies and high-end television production. They really have got the capability to fit into either a studio or a location shoot environment.
RAW, how big is RAW? That's got to...
Well, we're talking
gigantic.
As you get into the like normal frame rates of like roughly 2430p, you're looking at maybe about four gigs for a minute.
you can even go higher than 60 frames per second. I heard last night you can go up to 120, but you sacrifice something.
Yeah, what ends up happening there is if you're going to do 4K at 120, you're going to actually cut the vertical resolution in half. So you still have your 4096, but you go from 2160 down to 1080, and then you basically recompose that back up to 2160.
I don't want to interrupt, but I just want to show you what they're doing here. So something's happened terrible to the furniture maker.
Oh, no.
So we've got a security guard in here with a flashlight.
It's and this CSI.
This is to demonstrate how well this works. They've turned all the lights off. They've only got a guy with a flashlight. And if you look at the 1DC over here, it's hard to believe. I mean, it looks like as well lit as it was before, even when you zoom in.
That's incredible.
Very little grain. And that is amazing. That is really remarkable.
That was another thing I noticed last night was one of the filmmakers was talking about shooting up at 2200 ISO or so and not seeing any grain, any noise.
Yeah, that, especially on the C500, low noise is one of the hallmark features. It actually goes up to 20,000 ISO on this camera. And we've had some of these directors, the Hollywood directors that tried this out, just almost like giggling to us because they were so happy to be able to shoot at that low light level and still get a fantastic image.
It's amazing.
This is one of the zoom lenses that you're
one of the new
about.
Zoom lenses.
The new zoom lenses, yeah.
Yeah, actually, this is not the compact. This is the full size zoom. 14
yeah, this
and
looks
half
like
to
60. This looks like I'll be on the movie set with this one. I mean, that's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit too big for a handheld or Steadicam, but the ones that we're talking about that are the compact zooms are about half this size, and so we either have 15.5 to 47, which would be the closer to this, or we have a 30 to 105.
You want one, Brent?
What's the price on this one?
This particular
roughly.
Lens, this particular lens, is you're looking at roughly 45K.
What about the camera body?
The camera body, the C500, we anticipate that it'll probably come in at around 30K.
That's amazing, really. I mean, for what
it really
you're
is amazing. For 4K at 60 frames per second, up to 60
or
frames
Or 120,
per second.
Right?
Or 120, but you're not getting the full resolution at that point.
And it's also 10-bit, which is a huge deal because now you're able to really get a much better color gamut. And also you have very, very good differentiation between your subject and background so that if you're doing a compositing like a green screen, you're going to be able to do down to the hair level detail without any problem.
Now, Chuck, you said an interesting thing. This is set up so I can plug in two SDI cables and do live broadcast with this. Live 4K broadcast, who's doing that? And how would I be able to watch it?
No, I don't. I think we're a little bit premature on the live broadcast.
This is a little early.
But what we are doing is coming off into external recorders that are mounted right on the rail. So that's a terrific thing to be able to get that. And then some of those boxes, like AJA has got one right now.
Right.
They have a Thunderbolt pass-through so that you can go direct to your computer right off the live feed.
Amazing, amazing.
Now, of course, 4K, as we know, is not a standard for the home yet.
It is in Hollywood, though, right?
Well, certainly in the theater, in the commercial cinema, it's becoming one. Sony has a 4K projector that they're implementing in theaters. We saw last night, what we saw was on a Barco, a 4K DLP projector, cinema projector. So that is going to become now something that people are going to be able to see in the cinema. Interestingly, the two 10-minute films we saw last night were delivered on 32-gigabyte thumb drives.
That is kind of amazing.
But 4K is becoming more important in the Hollywood community, certainly, and will certainly become more common in the commercial cinema.
I want a 4K TV. That's what I want.
Well, actually, I think we have one right over here, don't we?
Yeah, let's take a look. Chuck Westfall is with us from Canon Corporation. We're taking a look at the Canon booth. We're going to go see Sony, JVC, and Panasonic, too, as we continue with Home Theater Geeks. We're at the NAB show 2012. You know what's nice? It's crowded. In fact, they said 90,000 attendees this year.
That's what I heard, something along those lines,
but
80 to 90.
It's not anywhere near as crowded as CES is. So
CES this year was 150,000.
Right. So it's still a little bit more of a relaxed environment. It's also less of a consumer crowd. It's much more broadcast engineers, serious people.
Right.
That makes it kind of more civilized, I think. But it also means that the tech level is higher. You know,
right.
People are asking tough questions, and the people on the floor can answer those questions. I don't see a lot of booth babes here, for instance.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same. Okay, now it's
4K?
Pretty crowded.
Oh, it's our theater
in
here.
It's sitting right up there, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, that is that's not our example of 4K, but... What we're doing in here, the reason that we have this here is because when you walk in and sit down, we're actually showing the same films that we showed last night using a 4K projector in there. Now, if you wanted to see the 4K monitors, I can walk over to that, but that's going to be on the other side of the booth.
That's all right.
That's okay. Let's go take a look.
You don't mind, Brent, do you? You don't mind, folks? All right, let's take a walk. The other side of the booth.
The other side of the booth.
So if you come to NAB, you can get in line there. And I want to see, I'm going to come back. I want to see those videos that you saw last night.
You really should
see
them.
They sound amazing.
They're beautiful. They're
or
they
could just give me the thumb drive and I'll take them home. Why not?
Now it's no problem. So, we're going to get out of the thick of things there in the Canon booth.
A little easier to walk on the edge here.
Yeah, you're right. The aisles are quite a bit less.
It's easier to navigate,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, less crowded.
No less exciting, though, I have
to say.
No,
absolutely not.
Here's a 4K workflow, and, of course, that's a big issue if you're a producer.
If you're a pro, yeah.
You need to be able to get look at the size of these storage area networks. Each one of these is a hard drive. They're fiber connected. You've got to move a lot of data if you're starting to shoot 4K.
That's true.
And this is a reference display.
Right.
So is it OLED or what? LCD? How does it?
It's an LCD.
LCD.
It's 30-inch. And what we're showing here is just basically our prototype. Now, we had shown a similar prototype roughly a year and a half ago at a technology expo that we held in Manhattan. But now we're that much further along in terms of development. And
this is live video. Is this coming via the SDI?
Yeah, actually, this is. This is coming straight out of the C500.
And as you can see, people are moving it around because they're playing with the camera. It looks incredible. I got to say, it's an amazing
You're
display.
Standing right up next to it.
I feel like I'm looking through a window at what's going on the other side of the booth.
Well, we recognize that in order for people to really be able to appreciate the color and resolution that they're getting out of their 4K cameras, that they need to have a good quality monitor at this level in order to do that. So
you can read. I'm not kidding. And I know at home you probably can't. But I can read the fine print on this booze bottle right here. I can read the warnings label on that
electrical
junction.
Box.
I mean, it's stunning. Yeah. I love it. I'm a huge 4K fan, yeah. Much more so than 3D. To me, that looks pretty 3D.
Yeah. It actually does look pretty three-dimensional.
Doesn't it feel like you put your hand right in there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Chuck, thank you so much for giving some time and showing us what's up with Canon. And I'll tell you, it's interesting that Canon waited to NAB to announce this. They didn't announce it at a photography show. They didn't announce it at CES. This is a show for people who are interested in this kind of stuff, I think.
Well, it's the ideal show for this kind of equipment. You've got exactly the perfect audience for high-end 4K acquisition and display.
Right. We're all interested in that.
Indeed.
Thank you, Chuck.
Chuck,
appreciate
thanks
it.
So much.
All right, we're going to take a walk. Nice to see you, Chuck. Thank you so much. Where should we go next? You want to go to Panasonic? You want
to
JVC?
Next.
All right,
Panasonic
while we're walking, next. Can I talk about Squarespace?
Oh, I wish you would.
You know, it's funny. We I was doing a Squarespace ad earlier today, and we were talking. I can't remember who was on the set with me. It was somebody who does high-end solutions for television and broadcasters.
Uh-huh.
And he says, oh, yeah, we always tell our clients use Squarespace. You can't bring a Squarespace site down. That's what I keep saying. Squarespace uses I should explain. It's hosting for your website and content management software together. You cannot bring this hosting down. Their virtual server technology is very sophisticated. When a lot of people come to your site, Squarespace flips a switch kind of automatically. They don't even have to do it by hand, and you get more bandwidth. There's never a time when you don't have enough bandwidth to handle all your visitors. That's just one of many reasons why Squarespace hosting is the best. But then add on top of that the great Squarespace content management system, and you've really got something. They've got all new templates. They've got some amazing designs and styles, 300-plus fonts from the Google Web Font Library. You'll be able to go to Squarespace, pick a template, get a site working, and it won't look like any other site. It'll look like your site. It'll be unique to you, and it will be beautiful. And the best part is you can do this right now for no cost. You don't even need a credit card. Just go to squarespace.com, click that Try It Free button. You've got access to the entire Squarespace feature set, including the iPhone app, the Android app, the tablet apps for iPhone and Android, or iPad and Android. It's just really a great system. If you decide you like it, get ready for this. As little as $8 a month when you buy the annual package.
What?
I know. I don't know why anybody would use anything else, really. I mean, they've rearranged their pricing, and it's so affordable now.
You know, I'm going to do my Tuba Christmas site on that.
Yeah. Perfect.
There you go.
$8 a month.
Yeah.
Now, I do encourage you to buy the yearly package because I've got a special code that'll take 10% off whatever package you buy, but the bigger the package, the more you save. NAB4. NAB and the number 4, that's the code for Squarespace. So when you don't need that to sign up for the free trial, but when you decide to buy, use the offer code NAB4 at any time, and you'll get 10% off, and that's a nice savings.
Sounds great.
You're going to love it. That makes it $7.27 a month. If my math is correct. Squarespace.com. We thank them for their support of our NAB show. And I think a lot of television and other media are using Squarespace now, and including Tuba Christmas.
Tuba Christmas.
What is Tuba Christmas?
Tuba Christmas is a concert that I am now the director of, where every year in December, I invite all the tuba players in L.A. at any level of performance to come and play Christmas carols.
Oh, how fun. How many do you get?
Last year we had 150.
150?
150
tuba
players.
That way.
Are we?
Yep.
Okay. Yes, 150 tuba players.
You've not heard anything until you've heard 150 tubas
playing
Christmas
jingle bells.
Carol.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
All right. We are. This is Home Theater Geeks. We are live from the NAB show in Las Vegas, Nevada, 2012 NAB. We love coming here. We did this last year.
It's so much fun.
It's so much fun. We're now the official streaming partner for NAB, and I'm really proud of that because here we are with all these pros and the big shot companies.
Oh, I know.
And Twit's the official streaming partner. I love that. And here we are at the Panasonic booth.
And my friend Peter Fannin is going to show us
around
the Panasonic
booth. Oh, I remember Peter from last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Dapper Peter Fannin, we call him.
Peter, come on over.
Hey, Peter, good to see you again. Welcome back.
Good to see you,
man. All right,
you
get in the middle here.
Yeah, good. Excellent. Very good. All is very well. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you so much for joining us on Home Theater Geeks.
To NAB.
How many have there been for you, Scott? How many?
You know, NAB, I'm pretty new at NAB. I've been going to CES for 20 years. But NAB, this is probably my second or third one, so I'm still sort of getting my NAB legs. But
this is the other side of that coin, you know.
Exactly right, and it's exactly why I think Home Theater Geeks is important to be here, because I want to show consumers what's behind the screen.
Ah, okay, well, you've come to the right place, at least from our perspective, because, of course, making the shows and getting them to the home is the other half of what Panasonic does. Here at NAB, we're showing the production, the capture tools that let you capture the pictures, store them, edit them, manage them, and then, of course, ultimately transmit them. So this year, in addition to those kinds of things, which we're building up over time, starting with digital many years ago, and into more and more flexible tools for the production community at varying price ranges, whether you're new to the game, you know, a 3D Z10000 camera is like $3,500. So you too can be, God forbid I should say it, Jim Cameron. Don't sink the ship in the backyard pool.
Okay.
But all the way up to the shoulder-mounted cameras that you see, you know, the pros using all the time. But in addition to those kind of toys, we're also showing new projectors, things for home and for giant venues and everywhere in between. For example, this band of
this
imagery
looks
up here.
Incredible.
Huge
this
curved is, screen right here.
Beautiful curved screen, fabric screen, just slightly reflective actually, is showing two 20,000 lumen DZ21K
wow.
projectors, brand new, coming out in May. Blended screen, so you don't see the seam. It's really a It can be for medium to giant venues.
So I'd actually like to have it in my house. Is that
maybe on the kitchen counter? Kind of thing. Goes along with
talk about surround video. Wow!
Cool?
Wow!
Well, what is the resolution of this projector?
WUXG. This is 1920, 1200. In this case, but this series also has SXGA, and then also comes down to 720 WXGA. So when and in fact, if you have time,
you see this in a basket.
I'll show you upstairs. We have a whole array and some other projectors that give you an idea of just what this baby can do.
You'd see this at a basketball game, a hockey game, a concert, that kind of thing.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So this has major throw weight, if you will, at 20,000 lumens.
No kidding.
10,000 to 1 contrast ratio. So we're talking, however, an exceedingly small package, typically one-third of the size of similar concert and arena venue projectors.
What is the display technology in there?
This is 4 lamps, 3 DLP chips.
DLP.
Yep, and you get both the brightness and the contrast with those two things combined. It's 4 UHM lamps, arc lamps.
Panasonic has
very
most...
maybe 2,000 hours on
wow.
a lamp. Nice.
Panasonic has typically been involved with LCD projectors, so is this your first foray into DLP?
No. Long from it. In fact, many of the major theater venues in L.A. and others that use our projectors have had DLP for a good long time. And frankly, in years past, like everybody else, we were huge boxes. This thing is not 3 feet long.
Wow.
It is barely 2 feet wide and a foot and a half tall. It's well-cooled. You know, stack them for 4K in the long run. But right now, they're also 3D compatible for any version of 3D, active or passive. And give you a chance to look at that if you have a moment a little bit.
Sure,
later.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. What else should we see?
Yeah, what else should we see?
I think for us, not just projectors and cameras, but there's an important new tool that helps producers make the game faster, deliver more on time, and give the folks back in the studio a chance to be there and manage the content even more than they have with offline editing today.
Mm.
And that is the ability to send either full HD or proxy video, meaning sort of low-resolution image
right.
of what's being shot in real time, live, from the camera over cellular networks.
Really?
So that kind of, right behind us here with our friends at DeGero, a Live Plus scheme helps you do the cellular, and there are others that we're partnering with to do the same. In addition, a second tool has become extremely important for timely delivery of high-quality images, and that is deliver the field image directly to the cloud and let others take those images from the cloud and use them almost same time you're shooting.
This sounds a little bit like
and
what we're...
That's with a partner called A-Frame.
A-Frame, okay.
A UK-based company.
It sounds like
shoot to the cloud instead of a hard drive.
Shoot to the cloud. Well, you're capturing it in the camera, also on...
uploading immediately.
And in our case, of course, you're capturing now on something else we're introducing this year, which is a micro P2 card. So instead of having a PCMCIA size card
mm-hmm.
to record in the camera, many of our smaller cameras have used SD cards.
Right.
Of varying capacities over
sure.
time. But now a micro P2 card will actually carry, at this point, up to 64 gigabytes of data on a thing the size of an SD card, just like the one you use at home in your own TV, your own camera.
What does the SD card go up to now?
The roadmap gets us to 128 gigabytes very soon, but 64 is available now
uh-huh.
in this format. So there's also an adapter. If you have an earlier version that uses the larger form, you slide the small card in the adapter, put the adapter in the camera, and lo and behold, you're shooting, you know, 30 minutes to hours of full HD on these very small memory cards.
People choose P2 because it's faster or greater capacity?
I was going to ask about that, yeah.
For several reasons. Of course, P2 was a big hit when it was launched 7 years ago because there are no moving parts. It's solid state, both in memory and in the device.
So is SD, though,
and,
right?
Well, and SD is the basis of the original P2 card.
I see.
But in order to get the capacity you needed for high-resolution imaging in typical professional applications, you needed more than a single SD card at the time. And now that we're able to get as much capacity in these SD cards as we can, and all the way, you know, 128 gigabytes at full HD is going to give you 4 hours of completely high, you know, totally high quality lossless HD.
Right.
It's just extraordinary. I don't know how you push those bits into that little tiny space, but it really is pretty cool stuff. So that makes the lightweight, easy to use, sneaker net, if you will, very reliable. Don't let the dog swallow it. But other than that, that the P2 and the micro P2 SD size card are tremendous tools. Easy for the use in the field, very easy to edit from, very high transfer speeds off the card. Typically,
you'd have to in order to be doing HD.
Minimum 20 megabits per second and all the way up to whatever is needed.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool.
You're talking about your streaming to the cloud and to remote locations. Reminds me a bit of what we're doing right here, right now, which is streaming to the internet. We got people watching live.
Well, similar to the solution here,
the cellular uplink, yeah.
Using 3G. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And a 4G LTE is part of this package. So we expect over time that a lot more equipment will be equipped with this kind of capacity.
Once again, the democratization of Absolutely. HD production.
All right, what else? Let's look. I want to look at some stuff. Yep. What else should we see here?
I was going to ask.
Here's the live view. That's what we're using.
Yep, exactly. Right. Yeah, great team to partner with.
Yep. Yeah. Now I wanted to ask you about 3D in particular. I know Panasonic is a big supporter of the 3D broadcast of the Olympics.
We are the exclusive provider of 3D Olympics coverage here in the United States with our partners NBC Sports, and 3D coverage will be available. Hundreds of hours of 3D coverage. Provided by the Olympic Broadcast Service using Panasonic equipment, cameras, monitors, recorders, switchers, and the like.
Now, where will that be? By what means will that be available to people?
It will actually be available by any distributor that can carry 3D, and frankly, that is everybody. Cable, satellite, telco. The only mechanism that can't currently carry it in any respect is free over-the-air TV. So if you've got cable, telco, satellite.
If you've got a cable company that offers 3D.
It. Well, the good news is NBC Sports has terrific arrangements. They haven't made all the announcements about who's going to be carrying this when it comes. But needless to say, we're working with them to be sure it's the biggest footprint possible. Because, of course, today, typical mid-size and higher-end televisions all are 3D.
Have 3D capabilities.
And I think just as Avatar kind of introduced 3D to the film going public, the Olympics are going to be an opportunity to
we
put 3D
so.
In the home.
And you remember, Leo, that when HD came along, it was the breakthrough moment when you first had the opening and closing ceremonies, and then you got the games. So this year we'll have the opening and closing ceremonies, we'll have gymnastics, swimming, number of other activities, hundreds of hours. And
gymnastics in 3D is going to be great.
I can't
wait.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, it's fascinating because now as more and more people get to play with the toys and understand what you're shooting, as our friend Mr. Cameron would say, it's the immersion that counts. It's not the stuff that jumps out at you, although occasionally that's pretty cool too. But it's the immersion. It's what draws you in. It's the way you see life. So, you know, life happens in 3D.
True enough.
And now on a flat screen you can show it that way. Too much hassle.
Pretty cool to go to the Olympics and not have to leave your living room. I think.
Yeah, indeed, yeah, indeed.
Well said.
Now we're looking at the Olympics over here.
Yes.
Large screen. Is that rear projection?
This is rear projection. This is also a DZ21K rear screen projection. This is the 20,000 lumen projector.
The same projector we saw.
Format.
It really looks fantastic.
It looks terrific. And the good news is, no sparkles, no hassles, no issues. It's a very comfortable experience and incredibly crisp. But the brightness together with the contrast really give you a feel of being there.
It almost feels 4K. I know it's 1080p, but it almost feels 4K. It's very, very crisp.
Right.
Do you have any 4K here at the booth?
No, we don't, but we have discussed, and we're working with our partners in the industry, the whole 4K workflow plan. Because after all, it's one thing to bring a camera ultimately. It's another thing to be able to use what comes out of it.
Exactly, and, right.
So the workflow is the important piece in the middle, the piece that allows shooters, camera people, editors, producers to really create the product that we at home want to see. and that we enjoy the most. And that workflow is what Panasonic has been working on since the dawn of digital and post-analog. Digital platforms, of course, make all of this immensely stable. That's why today's 3D is not at all like your dad's 3D
in the 50s
or 70s.
I've been taking some cabs around Vegas, and I've been asking the cabbies, you know, have you seen any 3D? What do you think? And they go, oh, I saw it many years ago, you know, in the 70s or whatever. Right. And I said, oh, well, it's much better now than it was back
then.
It's
incredible. And, of course, in full HD 3D, you get a full 1080p image in each eye, alternating in the scheme of active
glasses.
Glasses. But that means that your eye-brain system is actually completely filled with everything that you would essentially see in nature. And this is why, when all the images are lined up left and right perfectly horizontally, when the image itself is so beautifully shot as HD can do, that you don't have the jarring things that make your brain say, wait a minute, that wasn't right. Because in nature, that's not the way you see it.
Right.
So it is so different. You can't believe it. If you haven't seen it on television, it's extraordinary. And, of course, it's now down in the 30-inch sizes. And it's a very powerful image, even in the smaller sizes.
You said you have 3D cameras down to $3,500?
We do. We have.
Are they anywhere nearby? We can take a look?
They're at the other end of the booth down here.
You guys have such big booths. All right, let's take a walk.
We'll show you.
I'm just
We have to take a walk here because, as Leo said, the booths are very large, at least these ones that we're visiting. Because
these are the big guys.
These
That's
are the big
why.
Guys, and they've got so much to say and so much to show.
Peter, is the booth at CES? It's about the same size. It seems like
a little bit bigger actually at CES because we're actually on the lower floor here as well.
That's right. You have that big amphitheater there.
It's almost twice as big by the time you put it all together.
Nevertheless, this seems huge. I must say,
it is big, and as you can see, the halls are packed. NAB has done a great job attracting all kinds of folks.
We do have a 4K production system right here.
So we can show you what 4K will become over time.
Please.
And all of us in the industry who produce, who make production equipment or work on the development of improvements are keenly focused on one important thing. Use today's high-definition infrastructure, things that cost a good deal of money and replace the old analog schemes, to manage 4K when it comes. And
4K is so much more data.
Well, a primary way to do that is, in Panasonic's case, moving from what we have today, a family of standards for various production needs over various cost ranges and demands at X compression to one half of X compression. And so we're moving from what we call AVC compression, AVC intra, to what we call AVC ultra. And AVC Ultra will give you the capability of using today's plant even when you have twice the data of today's real world.
Wow, it'll require the same amount of bandwidth for twice the data.
Exactly. And so here, in effect, is an example of how it looks. We do have some stuff done on the workbench at the labs in the factory. Give you an idea to compare left and right images. The uncompressed original versus AVC Ultra on the right.
Now we're looking on this one display here that we're looking at right now. It's a split screen, is what you're saying.
It is a split screen, and then over
it's
to the right.
It's hard to tell. I have to say the compressed is not bad.
It's essentially visually lossless, and of course the goal is don't let anybody see the magic behind the mirror, right?
Right.
I mean, in HD, you were taking 1.2 billion bits and compressing it down 60 to 1 to get it into an over-the-air broadcast channel, right, to under 20 million bits per second. And when all is said and done, in the 4K world, you're essentially going to have the same issue, just at a higher level.
Right.
So one way to be sure that can work in today's plant is to manage the compression. Another way is to give producers the tools to see what they produced in the original before it's compressed. And one way to do that out in the field is the world's smallest and lightest 20-inch 4K display.
Oh,
this is a 4K LCD display.
I want it.
Uses Panasonic's proprietary IPS technology, which is called in-plane switching.
That's a type of LCD technology.
A type of LCD technology that lets, in effect, the shutters that open and close to let the light behind come through the semiconductor that makes up the screen, open and close so fast and so completely that it stays as black as you're going to get an LCD. It maintains the contrast at a much better level than traditional forms.
What about motion blur? And
motion blur on this is a thing of the past. If you ran any scroll, any crawl at any speed, I assure you, you will be able to read every letter with no blur. And that's where the IPS technology has become so valuable. But frankly, we're licensing to others as well.
Well, the iPad uses IPS, in fact. You know, what's interesting about this is really a Retina display, 216 pixels per inch. At the distance that you would normally use this, it is a Retina display.
That is exactly.
And I'd love to start seeing these in other places like computers. You think we might?
Well, we showed the original engineering versions of these at CES a few months ago.
I could eat that chocolate. I mean, I'm serious.
Yes, and the texture and everything
comes
through so brilliantly. It's really
even at this distance, it's a Retina display. Yep. I cannot see the pixels. It's
so
amazing.
We introduced this at CES to let the world know that it's possible and important in not just the big screens in 4K that we've been making for years, and that others are also making for the home environment in the next, during the course of this year, but for the production environment, if you can't see what you shot,
you need to see it
and know that you got the
with
shot
no
the
scaling.
Way you intended.
Yeah.
Yep. Then it's then you're leaving something on the table.
Scott and I have had this debate because he said for a long time, "Oh, you don't need 4K unless you're at 106-inch display." And I think 4K looks pretty good even if it's this close.
Imagine
I'll be honest.
If you are a game producer and you're going for the effects, this is the kind of thing you will want.
You want to see it.
Imagine if you're in the medical world. And you
were
trying
example.
To replicate both the color and texture of the human tissue you're working on.
Right.
You're trying to share long-distance medicine with other analysts in another city. These are the displays
incredible.
With digital technology transmitting it that give everybody a chance to see exactly what they're doing for the right reasons. So you can imagine all kinds of business applications, but the consumer application will not be lost. It will start showing up in the not-too-distant future. And, of course, the bigger the screen, as you said, Scott, the more valuable it is to have all those pixels.
Sure, sure.
Sure, but I have to say, looking at even this smaller screen,
it
looks so good.
And I think that's what we've learned from Apple, from the iPhone and the iPad, that people do want that kind of very high dot resolution. And it makes a big difference, and I think we want it on our desktops. And now that I see this, I know I want it on my desktop computer and everywhere,
consumers
frankly.
Consumers see the difference, and they do care. And I can remember the early days of HDTV. People couldn't think beyond a CRT because they'd never seen a flat screen
display. I don't need that.
Right. Lo and behold, you're smitten.
Right.
And guess what? We're taking it to a whole new level when this becomes reality.
Well, I first saw 4K at a Panasonic booth at CES some years ago, and I've been the one saying, forget 3D, I want 4K. I guess we're going to get both. That's okay.
We're going to get both.
I can live with it.
The same screen soon.
I know. Right. All right, what else do we have?
Let's take a quick look. Yeah.
Thank you, Peter. This is what we need. You know, we've got Brent, but what we really need is a little portable dolly with a scissor lift on it.
There you go.
And then I wouldn't need... Brent, this is what I need for you. You could just... Imagine, Brent, you could just sit here in style. And we just have Liz push you around. This is how we need to shoot the show from now on. I love it.
Put one of these on his golf cart, I understand. Wasn't that it?
Yeah. I love this. I love it.
That's great fun, but the small toy I was talking about...
Keep going.
$3,500 list.
In front of all these lenses here? Sorry, everybody. Sorry.
Hi, how are you?
We're cutting right in front
of
all these.
There's a 3D camera.
There's a 3D. Here's a little
3D. Here's a little 3D. This is for $3,500.
So this is the Z10000.
Oh, in fact, I think Scoble had one of these and came by our studio one day and shot us in the 3D.
Yep.
This is affordable.
This is not only affordable, has a decent zoom capability, lets you basically do things up to about 100 feet because, of course, depth in 3D is what it's all about. And then when you need to do more than that other than the close-ups, because over distance...
Say that again. You want to be distant in 3D?
Well, distance in 3D is what it's all about. The farther out you go, the more you lose the 3D effect. Just like your two eyes see something close, your brain knows it's in 3D, and farther out you know it's in 3D, but you actually don't see it in 3D. So the camera has to replicate that and has to move the two imagers... the two pieces of the lens farther apart or closer together, depending on the distances. So that's why when Jim Cameron was creating, and he and Vince Bass were creating all these incredible pieces of equipment for shooting Avatar and the like,
yep.
they would literally rig two cameras on a giant dolly, and they would literally move the cameras themselves apart or up and down, depending on how they were shooting, as if you were getting closer or farther as your eyes happen to be fixed. But the closer you get to something, the more you're towing in. Farther you go back, the more you're looking straight.
Right.
So this housing actually will move these?
No, you have a bit of a zoom inside this fixed housing on this camera, but you have movable lenses
as
you go up the ladder on the production
tools. Right, right.
So for the Olympics, there'll be a little bit of this stuff, but mostly it's going to be the 3D P1 3D camcorders, which the Olympic broadcast system will be using to shoot the 3D part. And, of course, they're also using Panasonic ABC Pro cameras for the regular HD shoots. It is the camera of the Olympics.
So you do have to have a dedicated body for this as well.
You do. But this is incredibly lightweight, shoulder mount, very flexible.
Wow.
And it gives you the chance to essentially cover the part of the playing field that you as an individual would do if you were walking about in a 20-foot circle.
So you don't do it from the far away 50-yard
nope.
line, but when you're down on the field, yep. you would use this.
And just at the edge of the field, and when they're running to your side, when they're on the other side, and if you have a fixed camera position, you're using yet a different set of tools because you need a longer lens,
right.
you need more
right.
flexibility in the distance, the so-called interocular between
right.
the eyes
right.
distance.
I didn't realize it was so complicated.
Well, this is actually the second major generation. We launched the 3D A1 3 years ago.
I remember,
it was
yeah.
such a huge hit that our engineers continued to work on it and expand the ability of the camera all in the integrated package. So unlike others, you buy it, you buy a whole package, and it's pretty easy to use, pretty straightforward. The camera guys seem to love it. We've gotten some great feedback about the man-machine interface, the ability of camera people to use it comfortably the way that works for them.
Wasn't one of the Panasonic 3D cameras taken up on one of the last shuttle flights?
It was indeed, and this is, in fact, the guy. It was his predecessor, the A1, and some of those images are just
yeah,
incredible.
They're spectacular, yeah.
If you think something is, forgive me for saying it, out of this world, wait till you see those
yeah.
pictures. I think NASA was very pleased, and we were happy to be their partner.
We actually, Jammer B, bought the DVD, the 3D DVD, and we were showing it. Remember that, John? This is the camera that they used to shoot that 3D shuttle footage that you loved so much. That's cool.
Right.
It was
so
a beautiful
these
DVD.
Production tools, the displays, the ability to record, edit, including edit on laptops in 3D. We try to make it end-to-end easy, and with a combination of media like the SD card or file-based media inside a recording device.
And the increased compression.
Absolutely, and that's, of course, coming over time. And, in fact, several of the new cameras we have are going to be upgradable to handle the new compression schemes. So you can safely buy some of the mid- and upper-range cameras today, knowing that you will be able, with software downloads and
that's
in
great.
One case a piece of hardware, to upgrade. You haven't lost the value of what you purchased.
That's really great news.
Well,
one of these days we have to do a piece on all of the different backdrops that they use to demonstrate
these
cameras.
Yeah.
They're always very colorful, very intricate, of course, a lot of detail. In the case of these cameras, they're showing off 3D,
so there's
a lot of depth. Exactly.
Yeah.
I just want to sit down and join her. She looks like she's got something delicious there on the table.
It's actually Chinese checkers.
Oh, never mind. I'll eat anything at this point. Peter, thank you so much.
Lovely to see you. Thanks really, so much, Leo.
Really
great
fantastic.
Scott,
I'm excited.
As always,
yeah.
As always. Great pleasure.
Thank you.
All right.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you. Onward and upward.
JVC.
We're not necessarily upward. Meanwhile, as we move, whoops, thank you. I'm going to do a little commercial for our friends at Pond 5. You know, when I look at all this stuff, and really when I look at NAB in general, I realize so many people are becoming content creators, and Pond 5 really gives you a chance to make a living creating content because it's the world's number one media marketplace. So this is an ad for content creators. I've talked about Pond 5 before for people who do PowerPoint presentations, videos on YouTube, a great place to get sound effects, music, video, photos, After Effects projects, and more, all royalty-free. You pay once, use it any way you want. You never have to worry about copyright violations or rights. It's yours to use. But that's for the buyer. For the seller, Pond5 is great, too. You set your own price. They give you industry-leading royalty values. And if you're here at NAB Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, go to the Pond5 booth. They're having a beer blast for content creators.
Fantastic. I'm there.
Yeah, because they're trying to get people who come to a show like this who have these 3D cameras. Yes, they have 3D clips and all of that to put it on Pond5. Pond5 is a great place to get your media. Millions of video clips, sound effects, music, photos, and more for all of your creations.
Pond5.com.
3D as well. Now, get ready for this. Pond5.com/twit. This is our secret URL of the day.
Ooh,
you
secret.
Go there, they've got 50 free clips, royalty-free, you can use right now.
Wow.
No cost to you.
Cool.
50. Pond5.com/twit.
I'm right there.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that a good deal?
A great
deal. And they do have a free clip every week and stuff like that. They're just doing a great job. Pond5.com. We thank them for supporting us at the NAB show. Here we are at JVC.
And we're looking for Dave. Here's Dave.
Wow.
Hey,
look
how
at that.
You doing?
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Just
Dave
get
Walton.
Right in the middle here,
yeah,
Dave.
Here you go.
Leo Laporte, nice to see you.
Hey, nice to see
thanks
you.
Thanks for spending some time with us.
We were here last year, and you were showing us some stuff in JVC, and I'm sure a year has gone by, and a lot of new things have come out. So what do we have here today?
Well, we're making some big news here at the show with a couple of new cameras.
Okay.
And we're here talking about them. They're over here.
Let me get out of the way. Let's go look at the cameras here.
The best angle is the one that doesn't show the Panasonic logo in the background.
Oh, okay. We're gonna turn around then.
You were aware of that. You knew that.
You're a marketing genius.
I'll stand on my head. Anything you want me to do.
Is this it right here?
This is the new camera right here.
Ooh, Pro HD, the GYHM600U. Did I say that right?
That's exactly right. It's actually a series. We have a GYHM600 and a GYHM650.
What's new in this camera?
Well, okay, it's in between our larger shoulder-supported 700 series cameras. This is a brand new camera that uses a fixed lens. It's a long lens, 23 times zoom, but it's a wide angle lens, the 29 millimeter 35 equivalent for a wide angle field of view, which is great for documentaries and ENG news gathering. It's a three-chip camera. We use 3 1/3-inch chips, full 1920 by 1080. And
JVC was one of the first to do that in affordable cameras. And
that's right.
It does make a difference in color rendition. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Three chips are always better than one when it comes to...
Studio cameras always use three chips, but to get them in a camera this small...
Well, yeah, and also it adds to the sensitivity of the camera. It's F11. And that makes it on par with the most sensitive cameras on the market, so you can shoot in very low-light environments. And we record in a multitude of file formats. This is the only camera on the market that records both MPEG-2 and AVC-HD. And MPEG-2 is very important because that is allows us to record in the XDCAM EX file formats.
That's also the broadcast format, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. XDCAM EX as well as Final Cut Pro MOV, a native file format, so you can drag files right onto the timeline.
We love that. That's a big feature for us.
In addition, we also can record AVC-HD on the camera, just flipping a switch. The other thing that we can do on the 650 is record MXF. MXF in the new... AS10 standard that was developed by the Advanced Media Workflow Association. This is a standard that is designed to maintain integrity of the file and compatibility throughout the entire workflow, the production workflow. So you start at acquisition, you put metadata on the file at acquisition, and then it carries forth all the way through post-production, through playout, and onto the file servers for storage. So that's very important for broadcasters, and that's on the 650 camera. The other thing that the 650 does, it goes another step, it allows you to do dual codec recording. Let's say you're recording and you want to create a file for multiple screens, a high-definition file at 35 megabits per second for broadcast, as well as a smaller web-friendly file, quarter HD resolution. So you can create two files simultaneously, which is a great benefit. And the camera has built-in FTP and Wi-Fi capability.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
If you have a Wi-Fi hotspot anywhere near, like a MiFi card, for example, you can shoot and immediately then select the clips you want right on the LCD screen and shoot those back to the broadcaster for on-air playback.
Another reason to have dual format, you can have low quality for quick edit and EDL lists
right.
back at home,
right.
then bring the card back and give them the full quality, and they can just quickly whip out the final version. These have dual SD cards in them, so you can do that on each card.
Absolutely. You can do different size file recordings of the separate cards, and that gives you a lot of capability. For breaking news, it's invaluable because you're FTPing files back to the station while your competitors are still setting up a microwave truck. It's a great feature.
So much lighter than the old ENG stuff.
Ergonomically, they're great. The feel, the size, everything about the cameras gives them a great size and feel. They have built-in GPS, all the great new features. But the main thing is the picture quality. You're starting with a fabulous Fujinon lens, and it's a very high-quality lens that's very wide-angle, and that means you can get in close in a crowded environment, still get an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long lens, which would be impossible to put on a larger image or camera. A 23-to-1 lens on a large image or camera is going to be about this big.
Yeah.
And that doesn't,
Carry yeah.
around easily.
Yeah.
So I think we've got a pretty nice package here.
And what's the cost on it?
The GY-HM600 has a list price of $46.95.
It's not bad at all.
And
no.
the 650 is $56.95.
These are very affordable. It's amazing how much less expensive
exactly
these are than
right.
they used to be.
We're also seeing this trend towards being able to stream the content up to the cloud.
Love that.
Or out to somebody remote.
By a Wi-Fi.
By
FTP.
A Wi-Fi or something like that. It seems to be a trend that we're seeing here at the show already.
Well, yes, and there's a lot of things happening very rapidly, almost too rapidly to build into the camera. We've thought about that. We thought about doing actual streaming out of the camera without that built in. And, in fact, we have a lot of experience in that. 10 years ago at NAB, we introduced a product called StreamCorder. And StreamCorder was well ahead of its time. It was about this size, as a matter of fact. And it had the ability to record the time to DV tape. This was standard definition. And record to DV tape and also stream live to the internet through a at the time it was PCMCIA slot on the camera. You could put a Wi-Fi card in there. There were no broadband cards at the time, so and finding a Wi-Fi hotspot 10 years ago was a little hard to do. But we had a great demo. In fact, it was right here on the corner of the booth.
You remember it.
And
he remembers it well.
One of the problems we had was latency. With the codec that we had in the camera then, when you shot somebody, there was about a 10 or 12 second delay. So in order to do the live presentation and actually have a live presentation going on, we actually sent the guy over to the other side of the booth where he actually started the interview 12 seconds before the guy on the stage threw the cue to him so it would look seamless.
Wow. Of course, in those days, you didn't have nearly as much Wi-Fi traffic in the convention center as well, so I can't imagine that might have contributed to the delay also.
A lot of it was just the codec and the decoder to be able to get that signal to a monitor live. It's still a problem. When you use bonded cellular technology where you're using multiple cards, which I suspect you're using now, there is latency. And if you were trying to carry on a dialogue with the station or the home office somewhere, you're going to find that it can be anywhere from a couple of seconds up to maybe 10 seconds.
Still, it hasn't really improved that much.
That's hard to do in a live broadcast environment, and we recognize that. The bonded cellular idea is a great, I believe it's the future. It's causing a lot of people to rethink their investments in microwave trucks. But at the same time, the microwave trucks are not becoming obsolete for that reason. When you get to a breaking news event, It may be the airwaves may be so crowded with cellular traffic. If somebody lands
a
helicopter in the middle of Yankee Stadium, suddenly everybody in Yankee Stadium is trying to upload video at the same time, you're going to have a hard time getting a signal out through a bonded cellular system. So it's a ways off where you can rely out on 100%, but it's going to happen. And we're going to be ready for it when it does.
You know what I'd love someday, maybe somebody will do this, is a 4K camcorder. That would be so cool.
Well, as a matter of fact, right over here, we have a 4K camcorder.
I'm Mr. 4K. I love 4K.
Yeah.
What can I say?
And on the way, we're going to go right by another very important product that we've just introduced over here. And this is a Blu-ray recorder. It's the first on the market that actually allows you to feed an HDSDI input, record live to Blu-ray, and walk away with a finished Blu-ray HD copy as soon as you're done shooting.
I want one.
I want one too.
This is ideal for staging applications, for live events, for worship houses. Anybody who is producing live television who then wants to be able to provide a client copy immediately.
John, this records Blu-ray live from SDI out. We could record our shows directly onto this, and then I could give them a disc as they walk out the door.
That's right.
Exactly. That's the whole advantage. And it's HDSDI input, and it also has the ability to burn a window timecode dump. So if you want to make your Blu-ray... If you want on your Blu-ray, you want timecode on the window to give a client for a daily or something like that, you can do that. But this is a great product. We've just
introduced it. What's the maximum length of the recording time?
Well, that's up to the Blu-ray disc. I think you can.
It's a couple hours,
probably.
Some
modes go up to 24 hours.
Oh, really?
In some modes. So you can get a lot of data on a Blu-ray disc.
Will it burn
on
dual layer of 50 gigabyte?
I'm not sure.
And you can also go directly from your camcorder on this as well.
Absolutely.
And it takes Final Cut format and all of those.
You can put ABC HD files in and burn those to disk. There's a hard disk built in if you want to go to the hard disk and then burn the Blu-ray disk later. You also have a FireWire input. You can put HDV or DV in. There's a lot of flexibility, but what distinguishes it from last year's models and previous models is the HDSDI input and the ability to burn live to disk from a live input.
I'll take two. Thank you very much. Right now,
is this going to be available to consumers?
Yes, we're going to be shipping within 30 days.
That is great. We will actually use those.
I get questions all the time from readers and viewers of the show who say, "Where can I get a Blu-ray burner? I want to be able to burn my own Blu-ray."
The issue is SDI, which is not a common consumer video format.
Correct. But can you come in HDMI? Probably not.
We have an inexpensive converter that we use at the studio. $300 from Blackmagic turns HDMI into SDI.
Right.
Easy enough to do.
You can't go HDMI in directly to this.
No, you would have to convert it to HDSDI. And I might also advise, because if you have consumers watching, they're going to think, well, I can take the output of another
their Blu-ray player.
Well, the problem is with the copy protection on HDMI, it will shut down the HDSDI output as soon as the copy protected. So that won't work. Likewise, the HDSDI output on here is active and live until you play a copy protected disc, in which case the HDSDI is shut down, and then you can only get output through the HDMI.
But if we record our shows on this from our TriCaster and HDSDI, we put it in there, press play, goes right into the TriCaster, HDSDI. This is what we've been looking for, John. I'm serious. We'll take two.
And do we know a price on this?
$39.95.
We'll take one. So let's move on because there's more going
on. Okay, we want to take a look. 4K camcorder.
I am excited about this. I don't care how much it costs. I want one.
Oh, look at this.
Camcorder.
Hang on. Excuse me. Pardon me. I'm going to come right through so I can get you the microphone.
Okay.
And the image quality on this is amazing.
This is the GYHMQ10. We have two of them here. They're identical. This one here has a larger screen on it, a larger viewfinder. One of the advantages of the larger screen is because there's so much resolution that you're not going to be able to focus on a little screen like this. So by putting the larger screen on the camera and then zooming in, you still have to zoom in, you're going to be able to get pixel for pixel resolution on this screen in order to focus. This is the only self-contained full 4K camcorder on the market in this size. It records to four SDHC memory cards. It has an 8.3 megapixel imager, which gives you a native 3840 by 2160 image.
Which is also, you're going the 3860 route rather than the 4096 route.
Because this is four times HD. It's a video camera. It's for video screens, and the aspect ratio is 16 by 9. Once you get to 4096, you're not in 16 by 9 aspect ratio anymore. And the feeling is that the 4K TVs of the future are going to be 16 by 9 aspect ratio. These Toshiba sets are, and the other sets that we've seen from LG and Sharp and others that are 4K are also 16 by 9 aspect ratio.
Which means, again, the pixel resolution is
3840 by 2160. Exactly two times horizontal and two times vertical of full HD.
It's so in other words, two times 1920 and two times 1080
right.
will give you exactly four times the number of pixels resolution on the screen as you have before. Now, I know that JVC is the first company to come out with the projectors with this E-Shift that gives you 3840 by 2160 effective, but will they be able to accept this input and show real 3840 by 2160?
Not on this year's projector models, because the projectors came out primarily for the home entertainment market. This was not really targeted for the home market. This is targeted for production people who want to go out and shoot, but
it's so small.
How big is it? Conceivable that in the future we'll develop the projectors so they do that. We do have a projector that will take this input,
sure,
but it's a lot more expensive, and it's not something that you would put in your home.
Yeah.
How big is the chip in this?
It's a half-inch chip.
Half-inch chip.
Uh-huh.
So it's native resolution. It's
yes.
not upscaling it. It's got that many pixels
yes.
on it. That is remarkable.
Which is not unusual.
No, a still camera has that.
A still camera
exactly.
is going to have 8 or 12 megapixels.
Right.
The difference is processing that much data,
it's a lot
60
of bandwidth.
Times a second. You don't do that on a still
right,
camera.
Right.
And what makes it possible in here is a IC that we've developed called Falcon Bread. It's a new kind of processor that's designed just for that purpose, processing high-speed data. If you look at that scene there.
The detail is spectacular. This is shot with a camcorder.
Yes, with this camera.
Unbelievable. I mean, it is spectacular.
And you keep going in and in and in, and it's still...
It's like a fractal. You get closer, and it's still...
One quarter of that would be full HD.
It's amazing. I am blown away by this. And this, of course, is early days. This is the first I've ever seen in this size. But that means we're going to start seeing these in the years to come. Consumers
Absolutely.
Will be able to do this,
Absolutely.
I think.
It has to do with the display devices and the screens.
We don't have screens yet. Yeah.
Not on the flat panel. They're beginning to emerge in projection, as you mentioned, our 4K E-Shift projector, which is right here next to you. And then...
Sony has a 4K projector.
Right. That's about $30,000.
$25,000.
More than the camcorder, I'm sure. How much is the camcorder going to be? Are you selling it yet?
Yes, we've already shipped.
Already shipped.
And the camcorder, the street price is around $5,000.
That's amazing. I can't believe it.
That is. That's astonishing.
Well, and it's the same. I have the same reaction when I first started an HD camcorder, and they got lower and lower in price. They get better and better in quality. And I think we're just a year or two off from people being able to shoot it. You're right, David. It's all about displays. How
do we
look at it?
We have an editing system over here that can edit it. So
that's the other thing, of course. Yeah.
And I always advise people, it's not the same as a standard HD camcorder. There are some trade-offs you have to understand, and I like to caution people, not because I'm trying to talk them out of it, but because I think it's important to understand when you dive into this that things are going to be a little different. Higher density CCDs are going to be less sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
It was true with HD when it first came out. It's certainly true with 4K.
Need a lot of light.
You're not going to be able to go down as low light as you could before.
That's absolutely true. And we also have to be concerned about how much resolution the lens has. So we keep the lens within the sweet spot. If you close the lens down too much, if you go to an F11, you wouldn't even consider an F16, but if you went down to that, the lens would become so soft you would defeat the purpose
right,
of the higher
right.
resolution. So what we've done on this camera, we've limited it to an F5.6, and then after that, the shutter kicks in. If you don't want to use the faster shutter, then put a ND filter on the camera. So when you're shooting outdoors, you don't you don't have stroby looking shots.
But when there's plenty of light, boy, this looks great.
Oh, absolutely.
It's amazing.
In fact, and it was pretty good in here, except it's not focused.
He's defocused it. It's hard to keep it focused. I mean, this is exactly, as you said, what we saw with HD camcorders, digital camcorders, when they first came out. And they improved as well. You know, I remember the first time we did a 1080p podcast. It was only 4 years ago. Nobody could watch it. We could barely edit it. Nobody could play it back on a computer. And that changed very quickly. We've all expect 1080p now. And I think 4K. I have to say, this is the future. Will you finally admit it?
Yes, yes. I will finally admit it. 4K is the future.
Look at that. That's incredible.
I mean, even how big is the screen?
A 55 inch.
It doesn't have to be that big.
It doesn't have to be that big. It still looks amazing.
Yeah, of course, people at home aren't seeing all the quality. And
no, it's true. What are we shooting here?
Well, we're shooting 1080p. But we're not going to send it to them that way. And,
right.
And so you'll never know. You have to come to NAB. That's the one thing you have to come here for. But that's amazing. $5,000, this new camcorder from JVC. It's the first I've seen in a 4K camcorder, and I think this is a revolution.
It's fantastic. We really like it.
Looks so good.
It is the future, I have to say.
Some people say, well, it looks like 3D.
Exactly my point.
Leo has been saying this all along, that if once you have 4K, then 3D almost becomes superfluous.
It's just so realistic. That's why. Your eye does the 3D.
Exactly.
And coincidentally, we're standing right next
to
the 3D
look.
Theater.
Well, you talked me into it.
Shoot anything in there. It's so dark. But I'll tell you what's in there, because it's an important announcement that we have here at the show.
You're still doing DILA.
We do DILA.
Still, they
so happy.
It.
I know, but I thought that they were, because they had DILA flat panels, direct views, right?
No, that's
no,
the
it was
projection.
Only it was only projection. Okay,
correct.
Right. For projection, front projection, we do DILA.
It's a version of LCOS, liquid crystal on silicon,
exactly,
which is a projection technology.
Looks great.
But what we're showing here is a 3D projector, and the content we're showing on it is some preliminary footage of the movie iRobot that's been converted to 3D.
Can't show you that. I'm sorry.
And that is because we've established a partnership with 20th Century Fox. And we are doing, with a proprietary system we've developed, conversion of films from 2D to 3D.
Automatic.
It's not automatic. Now, we do have a processor that does real-time processing, but we've always maintained it's not a magic box. You can't just plug a movie into it and get a movie out 2 hours later in 3D. It wouldn't be very good quality.
Right.
This is very good quality 3D, and when you put the glasses on, go in there and look at it, it's amazing how well it's done.
A robot was, of course, shot in 2D,
right,
except for Will Smith's chiseled frame, which was in fact in 3D,
but that movie actually won an Oscar for special effects.
Oh, it's amazing. Amazing looking movie. I just recently saw the conversion of Titanic, and I also saw the Star Wars conversion. And I have to say, the Star Wars, terrible. The Titanic conversion, pretty good. But James Cameron, of course, you'd expect to do a good job. But and I actually asked a poll question on my website that asked, should we convert existing movies to 3D, and the middle answer was yes, only in certain cases. And that got, you know, a fair amount of responses. Most of them said, nah, leave them alone. But I disagree. If it's done well, and that's the key proviso, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of money to do it right, and here you're saying that you've developed a new process and a new technology to do that well, and I can't wait to see iRobot, because that's actually one of my favorite-looking movies. It looks great in 2D. I really look forward to seeing it in 3.
Well, you can see part of it in here now, here at the NAB show. The technology, obviously, to do a movie like James Cameron did with Titanic is a very slow, intensive, and very laborious process, frame by frame, and you have to create a lot of what are called rotos.
Yeah.
They're objects that have to be manipulated and painted.
Separately.
And what I can show you over here is how we automate some of that on our workstation. We want to walk over here.
Yeah, let's take a look.
Get a little bit of how that's done. In fact, they've got some that are visible now.
It's basically an assist.
3D assist. This is the system that actually does the conversion. This is the one that's doing the iRobot movie when it's finally released on Blu-ray. This is a system that does that. I'm not an expert on it, and I couldn't begin to tell you the process that you go through. But what the system does is it allows you to create layers and manage these layers and automatically create rotos and paint and reduce the amount of labor-intensive work. Doesn't eliminate it, but it significantly reduces. That means we bring the cost down. If it costs as much as it costs to convert the Titanic for every film, you wouldn't get films out converted of a legacy library.
Now,
we've made it possible.
What is your estimation of the demand for 3D? It seems to me it has perhaps fallen off a bit or plateaued anyway, at least in the commercial cinema.
Well, Future Source is forecasting that by the end of this year, there will be over 8 million 3D homes available to watch the stuff. And that number is expected to grow as more and more people buy 3D TVs. So the market is already there, and people are complaining that there's just no content available. Well,
here's a way to get some content.
Absolutely. So this is why we're looking at this.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating to see. You've got the robot walking the dogs, which I remember that scene. I assume that the system here has sort of automatically isolated. Oh, okay. Whoops. Yeah. Let me take a look here at 3D. Isolated the robot and the dogs, which looks like a kind of a complicated item to isolate with the.
That's
with
the rotoscoping right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's. I'll tell you. Put on the glasses. It actually.
Oh yeah. Here it is.
It
over
works
here.
Quite
is it
well.
Final,
here's the final version.
Over
yeah.
Here.
It works
Let's
quite well.
So I've got the glasses on. You guys are seeing double images.
I saw it with the glasses. I was very impressed.
It looks pretty darn good. Now I remember that in Titanic, there was quite a bit of what I call the cardboard cutout effect,
yeah.
Right? Where one item is in one plane and the next item is in the plane behind it. It almost looks like an old-style play set, you know, with cardboard sets. This, I must say, at the moment, doesn't quite have that look to me.
Well, that's the challenge in doing any 2D to 3D conversion because you're starting with a flat object. And just cutting out different things and putting them in different planes doesn't do the whole job because things have to become round again.
Exactly.
And that's what our system does, is it helps contour those objects so that once you create the rotos, the objects are contoured and painted without a lot of extra manual work. So we can actually create that roundness that you are missing in this system and do it very efficiently.
It really looks good. I'm looking forward to this movie in particular because I love the movie and I love the look of the movie. And I always thought it would look great in 3D, and now we get to see it. When do you expect this to be released?
Since I don't work for 20th Century Fox, I'm not.
We won't hold you to it.
To give you a date, but it will be later this year.
Okay.
And, of course, I want to point out that sign up there. We're obligated to show that just because. We're so nice. And
it'll be coming out on Blu-ray, no doubt.
The robot is available to own in a variety of home entertainment formats from 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment. So,
thank you very much.
It's a commercial for Fox.
And for Panasonic. I mean, JVC.
JVC, yes.
We don't know Panasonic.
You know,
I never
Panasonic,
heard of
them. Who are them?
Yeah. Hey, thank you, David. Appreciate your time. Really fantastic.
Thank you. Really
what
appreciate
fun.
It.
What fun. Leave the glasses. I don't think you'll need those. Okay. Thanks, David. Take care.
All
right, hey, we got a long walk.
We do.
Let's go this way.
We do have a bit of a long walk now. We've been in the front of the Central Hall. This, by the way, we're in the Central Hall of the Las Vegas Convention Center.
This is the high rent district.
It is.
NAB.
It's the bigger booths.
Yeah.
And it's where the big boys play, as it were.
Now I've been checking our audio and video, and I've been checking with the chat room. And apparently, this year we've had no trouble. That was a dead zone over there last year. I don't
really?
Remember.
JVC, no, I don't remember.
We just dropped off. So I guess it's working great. And you know, I'm going to thank LiveView. That's the backpack that Brent Bai is wearing right there.
There it is.
And
There's
it's allowing
it
us
right
to literally walk the show floor wire free and stream it to you. That's pretty impressive.
It's very impressive.
Thank you, LiveView, for making it possible. Even better. When it gets back, when we get back to the Sky booth, we're using the Live View for our uplink, and that uses the Wi-Fi, actually, I guess it's probably Ethernet bandwidth, all the megabits we have at the stage to give a very high-quality signal all the way back. So LiveView is really capable, if you give it enough bandwidth, of doing amazing stuff. It is a fantastic technology, and we thank you, LiveView. We also, of course, thank the folks at NewTek for the TriCaster. That's what we use to switch this.
Right.
And we encourage you to watch the high-quality version of this. Home Theater Geeks will be available shortly after we finish the show. We are recording it, and we'll put the high-quality version up at twit.tv/HTG.
Absolutely.
We'll probably edit out these long walks, too.
Well, although it does give people a flavor.
Well, you do. You get to see what's going on. Here's the the jibs. Look at the size of that crane. It goes all the way up. This is a cam mate system. I don't know, 100 feet in the air. I want one of those badly for our studio someday.
You do have one jib at the studio.
We have a phony. Brent invented a jib. Look at the satellite trucks over here. A lot of lighting. Just a whole bunch of different stuff for broadcasters.
Movie makers.
Really, I want to say content creators of all kinds.
You know, I think you're exactly right about that.
Look at this. This is a dolly system. So with a crane on it. Look at that. Now that
Man,
is fantastic.
That is huge.
That's motion controlled. Okay.
Serious.
Says the computer controls the movement on that dolly system, so you can repeat the shot perfectly every single time. Yeah.
Look at these reflectors over here. That's really cool.
Wow.
Looking.
That's from Pro Photo, and those are pretty bright. You don't need much light to get a lot of light.
No.
Brett, we're gonna.
Well, let's
go
this way.
This way. Okay.
Yeah, why not? I just went, ooh, bright
light.
Follow
the light. Head to the light. What else is going on?
A lot of these companies, I must admit, I don't know because I'm not in the broadcast industry.
Yeah, you know, a few of the names I know, Belden,
yeah,
Tiffin.
Yeah, a few, Belden, certainly.
Yeah, but you're right, AutoCue. And as it is the case with CES, there's a lot of smaller companies that, you know, exhibit a show like this.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm really glad that nobody has to be doing tackles and blocks.
It's much easier to get around, isn't it?
To walk the floor. Yeah. Well, here we come up on Sony, which is
funny.
Our destination.
Sony basically takes over the whole back end of the hall.
They do. Yeah, it's true. And we're going to see all kinds of interesting stuff there, I'm sure.
Here we go. We've got our expert is here. Stand in the middle. Leo, nice to see you. That's Scott. And your name is?
Peter Crithery from Sony.
And Peter, you have an slight Australian accent.
I do. Sydney, born in Sydney, Australia. Uh-huh. Born and raised.
Are you based in Sydney? Or?
I'm based here in the U.S.
That's fantastic.
It's a long story, but it's a good one.
It was a long flight.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on here. First, I'm interested in these NEX cameras, and particularly the F3. What is this?
All right. So this is our dedicated Super 35mm camera set, our Cine set, where we have the very best of camera technology utilizing super 35mm sensor technology with a very shallow depth of field. Every camera has a superb performance characteristics, and we go up the range to the King, with the AK King over here with the F65. So on the left, we have the new kit on the block, which is the NEX FS700. That's a 4K imager, 4K ready camcorder, capable of very fast, very slow motion, 240 frames up to 960 frames per second.
Now, one of the
is that at 4K full resolution, 960 frames a second?
No. We can't do the impossible, but we can get very close, right? So, up to 240 frames is full HD.
No, full HD or 4K?
No, full HD for now, and then we'll see what happens later.
What's the maximum frame rate for 4K?
Maximum frame rate will be, well, we'll see. None to be disclosed. We'll see. We've got to keep a few things to ourselves until we. Until we get to the next stage.
So these are intended for the prosumer market, the pro market. Who's going to use these?
It's intended for anybody that wants to use them. They're very price accessible.
Right.
And all the way up to the King there for digital motion picture production. So the flexibility is there for the taking.
And you're using a mount that means they can use a wide variety of lenses, which is great.
Absolutely.
It's got great low light performance, it looks
yes,
like.
It does. So the F3 is the champion performer in the cost of performance category.
I'm just looking at the low light output. Yeah. It's incredible.
It's stunning, yeah. The 800% dynamic range coming off the imager, and with S-Log, where you can take advantage of all of that dynamic range and the very low signal-to-noise performance. It's a very quiet picture. And
so even at higher ISO.
Absolutely, yes, most definitely. It's very well known for that performance.
And how much definitely. Where are we starting in prices?
Well, we're starting at under 10 over here, and we're going up through the ranks with the F3s at 16,000, around about, depending upon where you shop. And then we go up to the 8K King, which is around 85,000.
That's the F65 is what you're...
The F65, which is untouchable, 8K RAW with a 1300% dynamic range.
That's the one you were talking about where they shoot 8K.
They're shooting at 8K, and they're capturing at 8K, but actually outputting 4K. Is that correct?
All right, so it's an 8K image sensor. The RAW data coming off the sensor preserved in the recording is 8K.
Wow.
Right, so but the technology's not there yet where we can extract all of that into a usable image. So we can work with beautiful HD, beautiful 2K, and 4K. So once the workflow pipelines are in place and once we catch up a little more in the development of the extraction process, we can go much higher than 4K.
That's interesting.
The camera's ready to do it. We're just not ready to implement it yet.
That's fantastic. That's so you're recording in 8K and you can save that recording down the road.
It's the perfect archive.
You've got something and you can do it. Right. Well, that's pretty amazing.
Well, that's in concept what's happening now with the movie studios where they're going back years to film and they're doing a film scan to 4K, which wasn't possible back then. So the same concept applies with the RAW. It's the perfect archive. Yeah, a few years down the road, you really can get much higher than 4K when you're ready.
We were talking earlier about workflow becoming a big issue when you're dealing with massive files.
Workflow is always a big issue.
And these files are getting so big.
Yes and no. I mean, the secret sauce to the F-65 RAW is that we can implement a very mild and visually lossless compression, which keeps the size of the file payload very manageable.
What level of compression?
We kind of keep that to ourselves.
Secret sauce.
There's some secret sauce in there we want to retain. Okay. But
so what kind of bandwidths are coming off that camera?
We're getting enormous amounts of bandwidth. I mean, uncompressed. Is like 19 gigabits per second. Nobody can really utilize that. So, we're talking to our memory cards, our SR memory cards, 5.5 gigabits per second throughput, sustained speeds. So it's very, very impressive indeed.
Will you do Thunderbolt or some other high-speed output?
Right. We're looking at Thunderbolt for a future implementation. Right. But, over on the workflow wall over here, the F-65's workflow wall, we're actually showing card readers in various configurations utilizing high-speed transfer interfaces.
So they won't be used for live for some time.
No, it's not too much resolution.
It's
technically possible, but the infrastructure's not ready to support it yet.
It's interesting. We're moving so fast now that you've got 8K, you just can't do anything with it. Yeah. I actually remember when the Reds came out, you had somewhat of a similar problem. You were recording at 4K. You couldn't really edit it, but at least you had it, right?
Yeah. Well, interesting. We've made tremendous strides in the workflow very, very quickly.
Yes.
And again, the workflow wall over there is a great testament to that. In almost no time at all, we can edit natively with the RAW. We can color correct natively with the RAW.
Wow.
And you can process it in extremely fast, environments, real time or faster, which really wasn't possible in a very short time
ago. Is that faster CPUs? Is faster I.O.?
CPUs, our software development kit, the SDK technology has gotten that much more robust. Just the pure software development, the engineering resources that are going into making it work is very significant and, in a very dedicated process.
That's great. That's really great.
It's
that mostly happening in Japan? Where is that happening?
No, it's a mixture of teams that are working collaboratively around the world to, make all this work in a very fast time.
That's exciting.
What is the model number of the little guy, the under 10 grand?
Yeah, the NEX FS700. Yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
4K, the image is 4K. It won't output 4K?
Well, not at this time. Yeah. Not to say that it won't down the road.
Once again, preparing for the future.
Could you do that in a firmware upgrade, or would you have to get a new camera to do that?
No. Same camera.
Same camera.
No comment as to how we're going to do that.
Ah, magic. More Sony magic.
More secret sauce.
What else we have here that you could talk about that you'd like us to see?
You've got our media backbone solutions here, enterprise management, which is a very robust systems-level management of file data and automation workflows. For a really detailed perspective on that, you're going to have to talk to the experts over there.
That's all right. I don't think we need a super detail.
I was mostly interested in these new cameras here. That's really cool stuff.
One of the key characteristics that we're showing here at NAB at the CineSet is some new features with the F3. New firmware, version 1.4, coming in May, which will allow you to map S-Log into a picture profile. Now, you don't need the CBK software installed for that. And the servo zoom controller for the new 14 times high-powered zoom for it to control it from the back of the camera, for studio applications. That's been a strong feature request. And and the SRR1, which is the SR memory recorder, outputting RGB or uncompressed 422 10-bit from the F3, recording to SR memory, which is the same core technology as what the F65 is using, but now you can pair it up with the F3 and get uncompromising picture quality using the SR codec.
Canon gets so much attention for these Super 35 cameras, but you've got a full range of Super 30.
We have a full range, but the key point about that as well is that you can use any lens that you want with these cameras, right? And so over in our accessories area, we're showing adapters that you can put on the F3 to map any lens there you want, Nikon, Canon, in some cases even better than what they can do with respect to communication with the lens from the camera. Yeah, so wow. we're really impressed with that.
What about the other thing I wanted to see at the booth, if you have it here, is OLED.
Oh yeah, OLED, the TriMaster EL series.
Yeah, yeah. It's, now these are pro monitors, mm-hmm. but obviously they could at some point migrate into consumer displays. Mm-hmm. But you also do you have the Crystal LED here or not? That was at the CES show.
Mm. Crystal LED? No, we do not.
Don't have that. No, okay, well let's take a look at OLED.
Yeah. All right, I love it. I'll go anywhere to look at. I'll walk a mile to see OLED.
thank you, Peter.
You're all done, huh? Thank you.
No, you're very welcome.
Take care.
Thank you.
I guess we're on our own again.
I guess.
Tom's going with us.
I thought he would be the same guy.
Well, you know, it's unusual that one guy. Oh, look, we've got teenagers in their natural habitat. I love that. He's on the back stoop.
Listening to his iPod.
Listening to his iPod. Once again, I love it because.
Here, we can go get a closer look over here.
These are it's so fun, the sets that they create.
I think it's
so much
great.
Effort into these.
I know.
To show off
the cameras.
They must
have taken them days to build
these.
Oh, yeah. Let's take a look in here.
There's more around here.
Do, 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 do. Yeah, he caught me. He was grooving. He was moving and grooving, and I was grooving with him. Okay, so we're... I'm not entirely sure where we're going. Here's Sony.
I'm sorry. I was following the girl. He's totally
grooving out. Did I lose Leo? Oh, he's in front of me. Oh. Yeah, here's the teenage scene. Oh, and here Tom is showing us the way.
This way, he says.
Tom is leading the way. Now, we have some 3D acquisition here. We have some new 3D camcorders, I'm sure. But I said I wanted to see OLED, and here it comes.
I was impressed with the Panasonic camcorders for 3D.
I was,
too.
It
seems like they own that 3D space.
Certainly with their exclusive presence at the Olympics.
Right.
I would say so.
TriMaster EL.
TriMaster EL, which is their OLED broadcast monitor.
Oh, I love how these look.
Oh, yeah.
Now, these are designed for broadcast engineers to look at the signal to make
sure
the signal's accurate.
They're reference monitors to make sure that what they're shooting and what they're seeing is what they intend.
Boy, those look good.
But you look at that color.
But they're also hugely expensive.
Yeah.
And I don't really think that this necessarily bodes... It means anything for the future of OLED in the home market.
Probably not, no. But the fact that they're using it in a production environment...
Means it's accurate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which, to tell you the truth, I was a little nervous about when I saw the Samsung and LG OLEDs at CES. They looked kind of oversaturated and over gamut. The colors were sort of too much, too intense. They weren't what they were supposed to be.
Well, and it looks that way here, too.
It kind of does.
I think they choose that kind of content, though.
In an environment like this, they want to show it off.
Jump out
and
at
the same
you.
Thing
yeah.
at CES.
Yeah. Well, I guess we might as well say no. Keep going.
Keep.
Let's go get a smoothie. You want to?
Hey, are you kidding? We're the
talk
we're the
masters
of all time. We can just
let's go over here and we'll just walk around a little bit, see a little bit more of the show floor, give you a little more.
Have we got something else to look at?
Yeah, we'll just walk around. No, let's just keep walking.
What's that?
We'll end it and keep walking. Wow, that's Sony.
Yeah.
No baloney. Oh, I'm sorry. Make dot believe. Which I've never really understood
as a
slogan either.
No.
Well, we saw Sony, we saw Panasonic, we saw JVC.
Okay,
wait a minute.
Okay.
We're good. Right. Thank you, Tom. Thanks. Right. Appreciate your help. So we saw Sony, we saw Panasonic, we saw JVC, and we saw
Canon.
4K
is certainly one of the
4K,
big stories.
A lot of really amazing. Canon really has the DSLR to video story. But I have to say, those Sony F3... That's a nice-looking video camera.
It really
is. I think
is.
You're going to see a lot of beautiful stuff done with that. That Super 35 format is going to be a good format.
It really is. And it's right around the same cost area as the Canon
C500. And the Reds. And I think a lot of this comes from Red, and they've really pushed that market. In fact, we'll have some coverage of Red. We were over at the
Alex
Red booth earlier.
Alex is going to be covering
that. We're going to let Alex do that one because I don't understand a word they're saying over there. Anyway,
Do they have a big...
they got a lot. In fact, I think that Lisa was over there trying to get Red cameras for our studio.
So there you go.
I'll let you know.
Excellent.
I don't know what we'll do. Talk about workflow problems. Anyway, thank you. We're
going to
move away from the show here.
Yeah.
Thank you for making Home Theater Geeks the live version once again. A great pleasure.
It's always a pleasure for me.
Scott does Home Theater Geeks every Monday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time on Twitch.
Ooh, and next Monday, my guest is Lon Bender. He was the sound mixer on The Hunger Games.
Oh, how fun.
So we're going to talk about his work on that and many other movies.
Oh, that'll be great.
And it's going to be fabulous. So
can't wait.
Tune in.
Home Theater Geeks, if you miss it, you can always catch it as you could catch this show by going to twit.tv/HTG and get the audio or the video. Get the video on this one.
Get the video on this one.
This is a video show.
If you want to know what it's like to walk through NAB, this is it.
Scott will be filling in for me on the Tech Guy Show April 28th and 29th.
So that's nice. It's going to be great.
Catherine Hall and I are going to Norway for Twit Photo. And the Norwegian, I guess it's called the Nordic Light Festival. It's a big photography festival. I can't wait.
I'm so jealous.
I know. I'm very excited.
So jealous. Now, I have to say, I'm very excited about subbing for you.
I couldn't do it if you weren't there to fill in for me, so I really appreciate you doing
that. If you're
that.
In Oslo, be sure to go to Vigeland Park, which is
going to be in Oslo.
It's a whole park filled with sculpture by this Norwegian sculptor by the name of Vigeland. Beautiful stuff. Great photography potential.
I took some
great pictures
there. Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you, Scott. Thank you for watching, and I hope you've enjoyed both the live and the recorded version of Home Theater Geeks this week, live from the NAB Show 2012. Leo Laporte, Scott Wilkinson, we'll see you next time.
Geek out!